Well, good morning. Hey, we are so incredibly excited that you are here as we dive into our fourth and final part of At the Movies. If you're here for the very first time, or maybe you're just back for the first time in a long time, we want you to know just how incredibly stoked we are that you got to experience some of the excitement that is At the Movies. And around here, over the course of the last 6 years, At the Movies has grown into one of our favorites, and I know so many of us are sad to see this series go, but there's good news. We're not done yet. Today is going to be an absolutely incredible day. And because of that, we believe with all of our hearts that you are here for a reason, that you are not here by accident. You see, every single week of this series, we've acknowledged this one truth. That for every single one of us, different reasons for every single one of us, but for every single one of us, there is this affinity inside of us for the movies. Deep down, we love going to the movies, and our reasons for that vary. For some of us, we love going to the movies for the absolutely unbelievable popcorn that we could eat until they literally have to roll us out of the place. For some of us, we love going to the movies for the reclining seats and the unbelievable big screens in front of us. For some of us, we love going to the movies for that new release and the crowds and the favorite movie that's coming out in one of our favorite genres. But no matter what our reason is for wanting to go to the movies, we all go because we believe that one thing can give us an absolutely incredible experience. We go to the movies to experience something unbelievable. And when we don't, we leave disappointed, right? When that one thing that makes you love the movies doesn't live up to the hype, you leave the movie theater disappointed, don't you? Like when you spend $8 for the giant bucket of popcorn and half of it is burnt, the movie just isn't the same, right? When you go, and I know you've all been there because it's not just me that picks the wrong seat every time. When you go and you're looking forward to the reclining seat and then there's something wrong with the hinge in the seat and the entire movie, it's like you can't get it to stay in one place and it's always bouncing back and forth and you can't concentrate on the movie because you're constantly trying to slam the seat back to get it where you want it. When you look forward to being able to watch a movie in that way and it doesn't work out the way that you wanted it to, the movie just isn't quite the same. When you went to see that new release that you've been looking forward to all year, and you finally reach the climax, you finally reach the end of the movie, and the ending is terrible, you wished you wouldn't have spent the $10 and wasted the 2 hours. See, all of us in our lives desire an incredible experience. And if we were being really honest and looked hard within ourselves, what we would be forced to admit is this. Is that we walk into this place for much the same reason. Is that we walk in here hoping that there is an opportunity for us to experience God in a way in which we have never experienced Him. For us to see God in a way in which it has eluded us for the days, weeks, and months in our past in which we have desperately needed Him. There's been a time in our life in which we have seen Him well, where we have felt Him, where we have been able to hear Him. But that felt like it was ages ago. And now we find ourselves in a place in which it has become much more difficult. You see, here's the rub, and all of us find ourselves in this place, including the guy that they allow to walk up 3 stages onto this platform every single week and communicate to you all. The rub is that every single one of us have come to a crux in our life in which it has become hard, and we realize it is not easy for us to experience God, right? Where it feels like every time we walk into this place, we were expecting goosebumps from the worship, and we used to get that, but now we walk in here and it just isn't quite the same magical experience. We pick up this book, and we pick it up, and we begin to read it, and the words that come off the pages are just a little bit confusing, and we're not sure what God is trying to say or what He's up to, and we find ourselves deeming that maybe it just isn't worth it to read it anymore. In our lives, time and time again, we hit difficult circumstances. And in the midst of those difficult circumstances, we feel the need to pray and ask God to show up and do something. And yet we look back on our past in the midst of those difficult circumstances. And what we recognize is that there have been far too many times in which it seems like God just isn't saying anything. We can't hear what he wants. We can't see him moving. And in light of that, we hit this rub of this quest, is this pursuit of experiencing God that has become so difficult, worth it anymore? At the very beginning of the movie that we are going to sift through this morning, the movie Onward, what we see is a group of people who at one time in their lives were encountering, experiencing something incredible. They had these encounters that they had come to expect in their life, but then one day things got hard. And in the midst of things getting hard, they started to question whether it was worth it anymore. You see, the beginning of this movie sets up the tension perfectly in your life and in my life. This tension that for every single one of us, in this pursuit, in this quest of experiencing God, this hope that we have, the reason that we walked into this place, when it gets hard, what are we supposed to do? Check this out.
Long ago, the world was full of wonder. It was adventurous, exciting, and best of all, there was magic. And that magic helped all in need.
Flame and Bernard!
But it wasn't easy to master. And so the world found a simpler way to get by.
I call it the light bulb. Tis so easy.
Over time, magic faded away. Magic left in you.
You ever felt that tension before? That at one point in your life, in your journey, in your story, there was wonder and there was excitement. And there was this ability to experience and encounter God in the incredible way that we had come to expect. But then things got hard. Things got hard in our relationship with God. Things got hard in our lives. We started to experience circumstances in our lives that weren't what we hoped they would be. And in the midst of that, what we ended up doing was we ended up looking for shortcuts. We ended up looking for a simpler way. We ended up looking for a quest and a journey that wouldn't let us down and leave us disappointed quite so often. You see, somewhere along the way, we started to believe that in the midst of our hardships, in the midst of the difficult circumstances of our lives, that those things came because of a wrong turn somewhere along the way. That every hardship we face, that every difficulty we walk through, that every storm that rises up in our lives was simply a moment in which we were faced with the decision, is this a train that we were meant to get off of and go in a different direction? But what if I told you this morning? What if I told you that when we view our lives and our difficulties and our difficulty in finding and experiencing God through that lens, we are missing out on some of life's greatest blessings? We are missing out on some of life's greatest rewards along this journey. You see, what if I told you that this was actually true? The difficult journeys of our life actually provide the greatest benefits. That the difficult moments of our lives actually provide the greatest benefits. That those difficult moments of our lives could actually provide a clearer picture of who our God is. And you're sitting there, and I know what we're all thinking, right? You're thinking, yeah, in the moments of difficulty and hardship of my life, it does paint a pretty clear picture of who God is. He must be a God who doesn't care a whole lot about me, or who is apathetic and isn't doing what he could do or what he should do to take me out of these circumstances. And when we view our lives and our difficulty through those lens, we are missing out on the truth. We are missing out on a God who moves and works on our behalf, not on the other side of the difficulty, but in the middle of the difficulty. But here's what we must understand, is that oftentimes in our lives, no matter where we find ourselves on this journey, if we've been doing this relationship with God for a really long time and we've started to drift, and we found it harder and harder to experience him, or if we're just starting out, maybe we walked into this place this morning and we have absolutely no interest in really having a relationship with God. We haven't started that yet. You see, oftentimes in our lives, the reason in which it becomes difficult for us to experience God is because we go looking in all the wrong places. It's because there are some steps that we have been called to take in this quest and this pursuit of our Father that oftentimes get swept under the rug. You see, if you've never seen the movie Onward, I want to set up the story a little bit for you. This story revolves around two brothers, two main characters, Ian and Barley. And these two brothers are on this quest, on this adventure, to be able to experience one day with their father. Their father died of a sickness very early on in their life, and Ian, the younger brother, actually has no memory, no recollection of any experiences that he had with his father. But they have this opportunity to experience their father for one day, and they set out on this journey. And very early on in the story, they have this tension, this dilemma that is presented to them. In order to get to the place in which they can experience their father, they can find the thing that will allow them to spend time with their father, they have two choices. Choice number one, take the highway. It seems like the quickest and most effective route to get to the destination. Option number two, take what's called the path of peril. And in that name, in that title, we know very quickly, right, that the path is going to be one that is filled with hardship. This path is an unconventional path. It's one that is rarely seen and is rarely taken by anyone else. But this path, if it is taken by Ian and Barley, actually provides the greatest rewards. And you see, so often in our life, we are faced with that exact same dilemma. That in our pursuit to experience God, to feel him and see him better than what we presently are, there is an unconventional path that has been presented, and will we take it? You see, this morning, what you need to understand before we fully dive in is this, and I need to point this out so that I don't receive too much hate mail this week. What you need to understand is that this message is not setting up this tension that spiritual disciplines, like picking up this book and reading it, or praying and talking to God, are not important and vital. Those things are paramount to us experiencing God. It's not diminishing the value of walking into this place, to a community of people who are doing life together, a community of people who are capable in masses of impacting our city and our world. It is not discounting any of those things, but what it is acknowledging is this, is that if we simply do those things on their own and we never take some of the overlooked step in this quest to experience our Heavenly Father, those things will slowly become mundane, go through the motion activities. Those things will slowly become just check boxes that we believe if we just check the box, then someday we'll get into a right place with God. And we slowly start to believe without some of these overlooked steps in our life that this thing with God isn't so much about relationship, it's about hoops and rules that we are meant to jump through to achieve religion. But God wants something so much better for you and for me. He wants us to encounter him in the ways in which we are expecting. He wants us to see and feel and hear him. But in order to do that, we must be courageous enough to pull some of those things back out from underneath the rug and begin to live them out in our lives. You see, we begin here. The first overlooked step in experiencing our Heavenly Father on this quest through life is this, is that we must be people who are willing to sometimes be quiet. We must be willing to be quiet. Now, for those of y'all in the room who can relate with me on this one, I'll simply point out my own flaws. The longer that I go in this relationship with Jesus, what I constantly recognize about myself is this, is that with each passing day, as I talk more and more in my relationship with God, it becomes more and more of a struggle for me to stop. Ever notice that? Like, we have become so accustomed to just talking, and to believe prayer is simply about God hearing me and my requests and my needs and my need for a rescue out of my circumstances, that we have voided our ability to just stop and listen. To be able to allow him to talk, to be able to allow him to communicate back with us. And for every single one of us, regardless of if we are a Christ follower or not this morning, here is our tendency as humanity. When we experience life's emergencies and hardships and heartaches, when we experience the problems of life, men, you can relate with me on this one. Our natural tendency as humanity is what? We go into fix-it mode. Guys, you with me? Right? Like, as soon as a problem is presented, when we speak with our wives, maybe I'm alone on this one and I'm the only one who does it. Like, my wife, sometimes she'll communicate with me and she doesn't want me to actually give a solution. She wants me to listen to her. But like, she can't even get the words out of her mouth. And I'm like, oh, here's how we fix it, babe. Here's how we go to work. And she's like, no, I don't want that from you. I don't want your solutions. They're dumb solutions anyway, Ben. Don't give that to me. The only time I get amens in here, right? But for all of us, we have this tendency to like immediately go into fix-it mode, and here's how I'm going to solve it, and here's why I don't need anybody else, and here's how I'm going to jump in and make this all better. And for some of us, these things called worry and fear start to crop up in us, and we know when those things start to play with our mind, it's like voices that never shut themselves off. And we just keep going and going and going, and we never stop and allow God to have his word. Sometimes we don't hear him because we're so busy talking. There's this incredible story in the Old Testament of the nation of Israel, and some of you know this, but let me set up the background really quickly here in about the next 10 seconds. The nation of Israel, very early on, were slaves in the kingdom of Egypt. And Moses gets this calling from God to go deliver his people from slavery and to eradicate them from the hands of Pharaoh. And so he goes and he tries everything up until 10 different plagues. And finally, by the 10th plague, which was you'll lose your firstborn son, and Pharaoh ends up losing his firstborn son, Pharaoh's like, I want these guys out of my kingdom. I don't want any more peril in my life. And so he lets them go. And as these Israelites venture out into the desert, escaping slavery, scholars believe that there was approximately 2.4 million people that left Egypt in the Exodus. And Pharaoh's reaction is that in that moment is the exact same as what your and I's would have been. Like, 2.4 million people just left my kingdom. I think I'm having second thoughts about this. I think something drastically changed in my kingdom and in my power. And so, army, go out there and get those guys back. And he sends the Egyptian army out into the desert to recapture them and bring them back into slavery. And you can just imagine, right? As these 2.4 million people journeying through the desert look back and they see the Egyptian army giving chase, can you just imagine the amount of panic that rose up inside of them? Like the screams and the scurry and the amount of men who rushed to the forward of the line offering their opinion and their fix-it solution to Moses. Like, this is how we do this and this is how we fix it. And all the voices and all the screams were culminating into one giant circus in the middle of the desert. And in the midst of that, Moses looks at his people and he says, "You really want to see God move on your behalf? This is what you must do." This is so good. This morning, we're going to jump into the book of Exodus, chapter 14. If you haven't done so already, it's a perfect opportunity. Grab your weekly. You can crack that open. You can follow along with us as we move through the text, even fill in the blanks. But here is what Moses says to his people as the voices are rising. But Moses told the people, "Don't be afraid. Just stand still and watch the Lord rescue you today. The Egyptians you see today will never be seen again. The Lord himself will fight for you." And then he finishes it in this perfect way. If you want all of this to happen, if you want to be rescued, if you want to see the Lord move, here is what you must do. Just stay calm. And those words speak into your life and into mine. You want to see God move and work on your behalf? Sometimes it's necessary to just stop. For us to create moments of stop in our life. Because if we don't stop and we just keep running at 100 miles an hour, we will miss him every single time. Secondly, we must be people who are willing to have selective hearing. People who are willing to have selective hearing. What all of us can attest to is this. We are living lives that run at a breakneck pace, right? Between our kids' activities and all of the assignments at work and everything that's demanding our attention, we live lives that are running at a breakneck pace. And when we live at a breakneck pace with all of these things going on, you know what we have? We have hundreds of different voices that are speaking into our life. There's the voices of stuff constantly telling you that to be more, to be what you want to be, you must acquire more, you must achieve more, you must become more. There's the voices of activity demanding that you sign your kids up for yet another thing this week so that you can be the ultimate chauffeur to 150 different activities this week alone. And then there's the voices of others. And every single one of us, there's this wee little thing way down deep inside of our gut that begins to rise up. It's this pull towards being a people pleaser. Anybody else struggle with that like me? And we start hearing the voices and the opinions of others. We start to believe that in order to live the best life, it's about making those people happy and making them like me. And it starts to take us down a path where we only hear the opinions of other people and we stop hearing the opinion of God. And there's this reality in our lives where God looks at us and he says, if you want to stop living a normal life and experiencing normal things, then you have to stop listening to the opinion of normal people. You have to change the way in which you do things. And ladies, you will understand this best. Sometimes you just need to take a cue from your husband or from your kids, right? You've like told them instructions and you're like, all they have is selective hearing. They didn't hear everything I said. They just heard what they wanted to hear. And sometimes in our lives, no leg pats to the person sitting beside you. Sometimes in our lives, we need to follow that same mold. That we need to block out all of the voices so that we can hear the voice that is most important. It's the reason that Paul gives us, the church, this instruction. In Romans chapter 12, he says, don't copy the behavior and customs of this world. You know what he's saying? Don't listen to everybody in this world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. How do you change the way you think? You change the things that are going into your mind. You change what you're listening to. Then you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good and pleasing and perfect. And I'm like, I need a little bit more of that. Bring me a little bit more good and pleasing and perfect to my life. But in order to do that, I must choose to have selective hearing. Third, we must be people who are willing to be diligent, to keep going. to give it everything we have, because we must recognize seeing, experiencing, feeling, hearing God will not be easy. There's this incredible passage where Jeremiah, when the nation of Israel is going down this path, that is a terrible path, they are drifting from God and they no longer see God, they no longer hear God, they no longer know the right direction to go. Jeremiah comes before them and he says, hey, you want to get back to the place where you can see and experience and encounter God in a better way? This is what you must do. This is what Jeremiah says to them in chapter 29, verse 13. You will seek me and you will find me. You'll look for me and you will encounter me when you seek me with all your heart. When you come after me with everything you've got, when you stay with it, even when it's hard, even when it doesn't make sense, even like we sang in that song, Waymaker, even when I don't feel it, you're working. Even when I don't see it, you're working. For so many of us, we've been led to believe somewhere along this way, probably by some guy on a stage similar to this who was dressed a whole lot better than me, that experiencing God was supposed to be easy because it's easy for me as a pastor, and so it can be easy for you. It's not always going to be easy. We will walk through seasons of our life in which we experience storms and fires and hardship and heartache that block our view of God, and it is required of us to see him again, to push through those things, to keep going, to have some stick-to-it-ness. We are called to be people who are diligent in this pursuit, not just with the leftovers, not just with the easy route, but to listen hard, to seek him with everything we've got. And then fourth, maybe my favorite one of all. In order to encounter God, there are times in our life in which we must be willing to go on an adventure. To go on an adventure. You see, fear drives us to believe that life is best lived in the comfortable, easy, and riskless lane of life. And deep down, we desire safety, right? There's this pull in all of us just to be safe. But that desire for safety in all of us forces us to constantly put ourselves in positions in which the outcome is predictable and assured. We put ourselves in positions in which we are constantly the dictator of what happens in our life. And then we stand back and we wonder, why can't I hear God? Why can't I see God? Why isn't God moving in my life? And God stands back oftentimes and he's saying, well, it kind of looks like you don't need me. Kind of looks like, Ben, you've got everything figured out for yourself. But if we become a people who are willing to take risks and put ourselves in positions of unknown, those are the moments where we have a God who is in the business of showing up and showing off. Those are the moments where we don't know how it's going to work out, that it forces him to step in and do something on our behalf. Those are the moments that our God looks forward to, that he desires, that he wants to be a part of in our life. But it requires us to be people who are willing to go on an adventure. There's this story in the Old Testament of David. And he's going on this journey that the Jews went on every single year at Passover. Every Jew from all over the kingdom descended on Jerusalem, which was up on top of a mountain, at the same time every single year, millions of people. And in his journey to Jerusalem, it was an extenuating journey up this mountain with all of your family and all of your gear. And undoubtedly along the way, scholars also believe that there were people who were looking to take advantage of millions of people descending on one place. And so there would be bandits and robbers hanging out, just waiting for people to pass by. And in the midst of this journey, in the midst of this quest, in the midst of this adventure, David begins to acknowledge this truth. And this is so good. It's actually called the Psalm of Ascent. He says, I lift my eyes up to the mountains. Where does my help come from on this adventure? Where does my help come from in this peril? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. But to see that, we have to go on our own risk-taking adventures. In the movie, there's this moment where in order to find this gem that's required for them to experience their father, they are required to get a map from the manticore. And the manticore is this animal that is believed to be adventurous and risky and dangerous. And when they go to the manticore's tavern, what they expect to find is nothing like what they find. They find this animal who has turned her risky, dangerous tavern into a family restaurant. And what she begins to realize is something that not only changes her life, but can change yours and mine as well. Check this out.
We need that map.
No, I am not giving you the map. That's it. I am done talking.
Well, I'm not.
Whoa.
You say you can't risk losing this place. Look at that manticore. She looks like she lived to take risks.
That manticore didn't have investors to look out for. She didn't have payroll to cover.
She could just fly out the door whenever she wanted and slay a magma beast.
Are you gonna fix the machine or not?
Yeah, in a minute.
Okay. Maybe this place isn't as adventurous as it used to be. So it isn't filled with a motley horde willing to risk life and limb for the mere taste of excitement. But so what? Whoever said you have to take risks in life to have an adventure?
Apparently, you did.
Table 32 said the mozzarella sticks are cold.
What?
See, in our lives, if we want to encounter the adventure that leads us to experiencing God, we must put ourselves in risk-taking positions. We must be willing to be a people who are courageous enough to go on adventures in which the outcome is not yet determined. Then fifth, we must be people who in the midst of our hardships are capable of taking our eyes off the fire. See, to see God, sometimes we have to stop looking at our circumstances. And while I said the last one was my favorite one, this one may be my least favorite one because this may be the hardest one of all. Because when we walk through the storms of life, when we walk through life's fires, our natural tendency is to stare straight at the fire. And to wonder when it's going to consume us, when the worst possible outcome is going to happen. It's like a train wreck, right? We can't take our eyes off of it. And we just keep looking at the fire instead of the one who is bigger than the fire. We keep looking at our circumstances instead of looking at the one who holds our circumstances in his hand. And we begin to sink away from God. We begin to drift, much like Peter did. In the story that we've heard a time or two before of him walking on the water, the moment in which his life hit its roughest hurdles was the moment in which he started looking at the waves and stopped looking at the controller of the waves. We see it in Matthew chapter 14. So Peter went over the side of the boat and he began to walk on the water towards Jesus. But when he saw the strong wind and waves, when he started looking at the strong wind and the waves, he was terrified, and he began to sink. On the path of peril, Ian and Barley encounter this moment in which they reach a part of the path where there is a drawbridge that needs to be lowered in order for them to get across and continue their quest to experience their father. The problem? The lever for the drawbridge is on the other side of the gorge. And in order for Ian to get to the other side of the gorge and to pull the lever and release the drawbridge, he must trust that there is this invisible bridge that is beneath him that he can walk on that will allow him to get to the other side. But Ian and Barley, they have this ingenious idea, much like you and I do. Like, I really want to trust, but I kind of need my own backup plan just in case. And so they fashion this creative idea that trust that there is something out there that's going to allow you to step across, but we're going to tie a rope around your waist. That way, if you do fall, it will catch you. But when Ian reaches the other side, he realizes something absolutely incredible that you and I often overlook. Check this out.
Bridge rigor invisia!
Hey, you can do this.
Yeah! Look,
step. Oh, yeah!
You got me, right?
I still got you! Woo-hoo! Ian Lightfoot is fearless!
This is amazing!
Yeah, but just keep going! Don't look back! Just straight ahead!
You still got the rope, right?
Yeah, I got it!
I am not afraid! Oh, man, I could stay out here all day!
Okay, but keep moving! We gotta see Dad, remember?
Hey, yeah! This last step is for you!
The rope gone.
Oh, just like the second half of it?
I needed that rope.
Oh, but did you?
You ever felt that way? You walk through life and you're like, yeah, God, I trust you. I trust you, but I needed the rope. I trust you, but I needed my own backup plan. I needed to keep one eye on you and one eye on the fire, one eye on you and one eye on the hardship in my life. And God looks back at us oftentimes and we say, God, I needed the rope. I needed assurance of safety. And he looks at us and he says, did you know? Did you really need that? Because when you look at me, and you put your eyes on the one who controls the fire, on the one who has the power to subdue it, on the one who holds our circumstances in our hands, on the one who is bigger than the storm, what you see every single time is this. You see that when you go through deep waters, I will be with you. When you go through rivers of difficulty, you will not drown. When you walk through the fire of oppression, you will not be burned up. The flames will not consume you. But you can't see that if you just keep looking at the fire. And lastly, we must be a people who understand that our God is a God who lives and speaks through others. Our God lives and speaks through other people. You see, too often we keep waiting for this audible, booming voice from heaven that allows us to clearly know that God is speaking and God is moving. And what we fail to recognize is this reality, that God wants to use you and me in his plan for this world. That he lives in us and the power that he has lives in us for the world and the people around us. That he speaks through us and our lives into other people's lives. There's this incredible passage, that same guy who walked on the water, Peter. He looks back on his time with Jesus and what has come of that. And how now that Jesus is gone, how can we encounter God in our lives? And this is the insight he gives. Check this out in 1 Peter chapter 2. He lays it out in this way and sets the table. For you are a chosen people. You are royal priests, a holy nation, God's very own possession. This is how much God loves you. This is what he's called you to. When you enter into a relationship with him, this is your status and standing and value and worth. And because of that, as a result, this is so good, you can show others the goodness of God. Do you know what that means? It means that he uses you to speak to me. And he uses me to speak to you. That God is in the business of working and speaking through the people around us into the hardships of our lives. There's a great part at the end of the movie where Ian has this list of all the things he wants to encounter, all the things he wants to do with his father. And he begins to realize he's not going to get to do any of those things, and this disappointment sets over him. But then what he slowly realizes is that each of those things that he wanted to experience with his father was experienced with someone else who had his father living in him. Check this out. So often overlook the fact that we can encounter and experience God as we do life with others who are in relationship with him, who have God dwelling within them. See, what we all know to be true is that life is hard. Life will be full of difficulties. It will throw roadblocks in our way all along this journey. Too often, this fear that is growing inside of us has taught us to avoid the battles of life at all cost. Has taught us that the battles cost too much. The battles aren't worth it. When we live our lives in that way, what we miss is a God who stands for us, who stands tall in the midst of the battles of our life. What we miss is a God who is willing to take the arrows in the middle of a battle. What we miss is the joy that can be found in the battles because God has been with us in every single battle along the way. In every hardship, in every heartache, he has been there. You see, we serve a God and have a God who is fighting for us, who is not some treasure at the end of the journey. We have a God who always desired to be a companion through the journey, who always wanted to be there, who always wanted us to know that he is a God who will not let us stumble, who watches over us and will not slumber, a God who stands beside us as our protection. You see, God has gone to great lengths to be with you, to do life with you. But he's not a God who asks us to jump through all of these hoops to simply experience him. He pulls out all of the stops to walk into our lives so that we can encounter something incredible. At the end of the movie, there's this one scene where in the midst of their difficulties and hardships and disappointments on this quest, their mother sits down with Ian and Barley and gives them this reminder that we so often overlook. Check this out.
I'm sorry you guys don't have your dad here, but this shows just how much he wanted to see you both. So much that he'd try anything. That's still a pretty special gift.
Yeah.
We have a God who would try anything to experience life with you. A God who has been there in every fire of your life, in every hardship and every heartache. A God who wants to stand in the way of the waves that want to knock you over from the sea. This summer, we took our boys to the ocean for the very first time. My 2-year-old and my 3-year-old stood there looking out at the water in much the same way that many 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds do, looking at the waves crashing in and recognizing that they couldn't stand strong in those waves by themselves, and it created this fear inside of them. As I grabbed them in my arms for the very first time, and we began to wade out as the waves were crashing into our ankles and then my knees and then my waist, the fear began to rise up in them like these waves were going to overcome them. And the very first moment where we hit the waves that were about chest deep and they were rolling in, and I turned my back to take the brunt of the wave so that nothing got my sons, it was this perfect picture of what our God wants to do in our lives, of what he wants to be in your story and in my story, that in every fire and every hardship and every wave and every storm that comes along, he wants to be a God that stands in the way of it. He wants to be a God who allows nothing to come between us and him. But so often in our lives, in the midst of the difficulties, we aren't willing to take the overlooked steps to see that God has always been there and that he always will. Would you pray with me? Father, this morning, God, we thank you for being a God who loves us enough to stand in every fire with us, to go through every battle with us, to block every wave for us. A God who doesn't wait on the other side of the battles, of the hardships of life, but a God who desires to walk through them with us. God, this morning, I pray that there is still a little bit of hope left in us. Hope that we can still experience you and encounter you in the way we expected. And to see that you are a God who has always been there. A God who is not scared by our fires. God who is not scared by our messes, but always jumps right into the middle. We thank you for that. It's in your name that I pray. Amen.